I would like to call to order the September 2nd, 2020 meeting of the TPA Citizen Advisory Committee. Pursuant to the Governor's Executive Order Number 20-69, TPA Operating Procedure Section 6.2, and TPA Emergency Order Number 2020-04, the Palm Beach TPA is conducting this meeting virtually using the Zoom webinar platform. The TPA selected this platform because it does not require the public to purchase or download any additional software or equipment to attend this meeting. Aside from the Zoom webinar platform that the participants will use to attend remotely, the public will have no discernible difference in their ability to watch the meeting from that of someone physically attending the meeting. Instructions joining this virtual meeting, as well as contact information for a TPA staff member to assist you, are provided in the published meeting agenda. Please note that although some members of the CAC are attending the meeting in person, committee members will be appearing at today's meeting remotely, either via webcom, telephone. Additional scheduled presenters and the CAC liaison will also be appearing via webcam or telephone. Before we begin, I will summarize our public comment procedures for this virtual meeting. Written documents, comments, and questions can be submitted online at the website provided in the agenda. Verbal comments can also be made live through the Zoom webinar platform. When you wish to be recognized, please use the raise hand function within the Zoom platform and then wait to be recognized by the chair and unmuted by the meeting host. Lastly, an in-person visitor may submit a comment card available at the welcome table. Please call the roll so we can establish a quorum.
Terry Brown.
Here.
Mark Bruner.
Here.
Jim Carroll. Michelle Damone. Greg Fagan is excused. Michael Fitzpatrick is excused. Glenn Harvey.
Here.
Jason Mankoff. And Jason, I think you need to unmute on your end. It should prompt you on your screen to unmute. I do show that he's present, Mr. Chair, walking, so I'm trying to unmute on his phone. Albert Richwagen, Ryan Rossi.
Here.
Paula Ryan.
Here.
Myra Newman.
Here.
Trevor Korn, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We need a... Can I have a motion to adopt the agenda?
So moved.
So moved.
Oops. All right. I'll second.
A first by Terry and a second by Paula. I heard her second first, Terry. So.
Okay. All in favor, please say aye. Opposed, say
aye.
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 All in, so it's approved. Motion to adopt the minutes of July 1st, 2020. Are there any changes to the minutes? If not, can I have a motion to adopt the minutes as presented?
I'll move to approve it. Accept it.
Second.
Thank you. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed, say nay. Passes. I have no comments at this time. Jason, would you please review the liaison's report?
Sure. Let's wait for it to pop up and then go through it.
Are there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Chair.
All right.
Good afternoon, everyone. So the first step is Rail Safety Week. So that's from September 21st through the 27th, and that's in observance of Rail Safety Week, and it's to raise awareness of rail safety and to inform the public, you know, to keep themselves safe near rail, highway rail grade crossings and railroad right of way. The next one is FDOT program for funding for high visibility enforcement for pedestrian and bicycle safety. And that's to provide funding for law enforcement agencies to conduct high visibility enforcement operations for bicycle and pedestrian safety. Next up is the Safe Routes to School. The applications are open for submittal between September 1st and December 31st. And this is an FDOT, I believe it's an FDOT program. And this is for communities to apply, you know, for municipalities to apply for to address transportation issues around school areas and encourage more students to walk and cycle around schools. Okay. Next, the FDOT has a lane repurposing guidebook. They updated that, and that pertains to road diet. So when municipalities are looking to go through a road diet, they'll use this guidebook to apply for that on a state road or possibly use it for their own. Then I've been asking all the municipalities throughout Palm Beach County to provide me their capital improvement programs to include in our transportation improvement program. So we have a comprehensive list of all the projects that are being planned and built throughout Palm Beach County from all the local municipalities, in addition to the FDOT projects and the TPA projects that are already listed. And the next item is the FDOT TransFlex web series. This is a webinar series every Friday during the month of October. So there's a website here, an FDOT website that you can go to log in every month, you know, once a week on Fridays to check out what the topics are. And we're hosting the Safe Street Summit this year. So the 2021 Safe Street Summit will be hosted by us, and it'll be virtual. Last year was down in Broward County in Fort Lauderdale, and it was hosted by the Broward County MPO. And so this year we'll kick it off virtually for the first time, and the date's scheduled for January 28th and the 29th. And lastly, September 17th is our TPA governing board meeting, and we'll let everyone know the week that we send out our board agenda, the specifics on how to attend, if it will be fully virtual or a mix between the two. And as always, if you're interested in any upcoming conferences, go to our website and check out if there's anything upcoming that's probably virtual that you might be interested in attending, contact us. That's all I have.
Thank you. Do any committee members have any comments or questions on the liaison's report?
No, but please let the record show that Albert has joined the meeting late. I had a hard time getting on.
Thank you.
Hi. And this is Paula Ryan. I just had a question about the transportation areas for cities and municipalities to work to improve around schools. Is there an application? Is this one of the regular cycles that you're reviewing?
Yeah, it's a Safe Routes to School application process, and it's open for a few months. So I think when you on the presentation, there was a link for the Safe Routes to School application and probably the guidelines of how to apply and what you can apply for. Do you have more?
Great.
Jason, yes, do you mind if I say a few more words?
Sure, go ahead.
So, yes, the Safe Routes to Schools program is administered by FDOT at the state level. So the application process goes through them. We do have those other programs that we administer here, the Local Initiative to Transportation Alternatives, and those will be kicked off later this year around November. But yes, the Safe Route to School one is a small amount of funding for funding your schools, and it goes through the state process.
Mr. Chair, I have that Myron has his hand raised.
What is it?
Myron has his hand raised.
Sorry. I just wanted to ask if in the future, if we're continuing to meet electronically by Zoom, if Jason, you could email out that report in advance of the meeting so that we could have it. There are all kinds of links on that, and they go by very quickly. I don't have a way of capturing that, and it would be helpful if you could just send that out by email in advance of the meeting.
Mr. Chair, I just want to note that all of our presentations, as well as the liaison report, are posted to the committee website. So after the meeting, and actually before the meetings, I've been posting them just before the meeting starts because I've had other requests from members. From the other committees. So it is posted to our website, and you are able to click on those hyperlinks, and they'll take you to the proper page. But are you still requesting that we send it ahead of time?
Well, it's just a little hard to, while we're on Zoom, to go back and forth to the website and check documents and things like that. It's just a little awkward.
Okay.
All right. So we'll do that. Okay. General public comments? Have any general comments been received?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We're going to move on to the next agenda item, which is to motion to recommend adoption of Amendment 1 to TPA's Fiscal Year 21-25 Transportation Improvement Plan. The TIP is a 5-year funding program for transportation projects in Bob Mitch County. The Florida Department of Transportation has requested approval of an amendment to include the fiscal year 20 roll forward projects. These projects were funded in fiscal year 20, but not encumbered as programming, as the remaining funds are being rolled forward into fiscal year 21. The roll forward changes to 21 fiscal year 21 are on the attached table. Jason, will you please present this item?
Yes. Thanks, Ben. So I'm the TIP coordinator for the TPA, and today I'm going to present to you the action item for the Amendment 1. This is the roll forward. So what the roll forward is basically taking all of the funds that have not been obligated in the previous TIP in fiscal year 2020 and advancing those funds and rolling them forward into the current TIP in the first year, which is fiscal year 2021. And so each year, the first amendment to the TIP after we adopted it last month, this is always the first amendment, and this keeps the funding consistent between the two TIPs for FDOT projects. So there was a total of 105 projects that they requested in the roll forward, and the total amount was about $14 million. In your packet, you saw the list of all of the projects, about 6-7 pages. And what I have listed here is just a snapshot of the first 7 projects that have a roll forward of funds from 500,000 and above. So basically these are the first 3 and these are the other 4, and most of the funds that are being rolled forward that we noticed was right-of-way funds for these projects, and a lot of the final ones were very low dollar amounts for administrative items pertaining to the project. So that's all I have for you. And if you have any questions, I'll I'll take those.
I have a question. I don't have a hand thing on my okay. on my software. I don't know why.
All right.
The question is that we had a lot of presentations in the past regarding certain projects where DOT had their consultants and engineers come in and present them to us. One in which I'm thinking about, since it's near where I live, was the I-95 Woolbright interchange all the way down to Seagrass. They were going to widen the road and make more lane, more turn lanes at Seagrass. But I don't see that anywhere on Roll Forward. Does that mean that that project is dead or been altered or a dead duck? What does it mean about the projects that we had presentations for that are not on this Roll Forward list?
I think if you're getting, if for those projects and probably the one that you're referring to, I don't know where it is in the process, if it's only in design or if it's beginning construction or where it is in the phasing. The projects that you see in the Roll Forward only pertain to projects that have funding from the previous, the final year and the last year in fiscal year 20, and they have to move those funds forward to fiscal year 21. And
so those projects that we got presentations on that were not funded are not in this Roll Forward process.
They didn't have funding assigned to them that needed to be rolled forward. Then,
so they're more likely dead because of COVID.
I wouldn't say that. But
yeah. So, Jason, I can respond too with that if you'd like.
Yeah, sure.
And what Jason's saying is correct. What you're going to see in this roll forward are only those projects that were in our previous transportation improvement group program for fiscal year 2020, where the funding was not obligated and spent down. And that's the only ones you see in this report. So these amounts, the, I think, $14 million he pointed out for the 105 projects or so, that money is being rolled forward into our currently operating transportation improvement program for fiscal year 21 to 25. So I just looked at the I-95 at Woolbright project, and that has design going on for fiscal year 2021, and construction's not even showing yet in our transportation improvement program. So that one's not even being discussed today. That's still programmed in our transportation improvement program. So you're not seeing the full list of, you know, over 1,000 projects that we have in our transportation improvement program.
But when will we know what projects that were striked will never happen? There's got to be a list of somewhere of ones where the FDOT has decided not to do them because they're not going to have the money.
So that would be ones where, we would see in the draft work program if that's taken out or not.
I want to comment on that before you answer, because one of the votes we took at the early meeting after COVID first hit was, I believe we all agree that the world is going to be different, and at what point in time are we going to get a presentation on what it is that is most likely to move forward or not move forward or shift and come forward? Just the question being, are they going to be doing the evaluations based upon the fact that we lost huge gas tax, right? So the numbers, as well as costs associated with projects that have been on the books, and with the fact that so many projects have been able to move forward because of COVID that could have been delayed because of construction delays related to traffic and this, that, and the other. But I think we can all agree that we've seen an enormous amount of, you know, infrastructure construction all over the county. So to, you know, your point, will DOT have such a list, and will they come back and discuss it in relationship to feasibility to proceed as well as changes in budgetary? And I'll go offline for your answer to all of the questions asked.
Well, thank you, Andrew.
Yes, thank you. Thank you both. I understand your question. There will be a change to how that the amount of funding that we have projected, that AFPAS projected for the entire state, They actually just finished up their most recent revenue estimate conference results of that related to transportation funding. And we can send out results of that. And if you'd like, we can give an update at our next committee meeting for that. But those, that new revenue estimates for transportation funding will be reflected in the upcoming draft work program that we receive from FDOT. So we usually receive it in the later part of the year, and that's going to form next year's transportation improvement program. So what you see in this draft work program that will be presented to you all within the next few months will show those changes. So the impacts that we've had from a new revenue production based off of COVID-19. And we'll try to do our best to present what we'll go through that and make sure that we, as staff, ensure that we see what's happening with delays in projects and projects that have been taken off that list and provide that in the presentation to you all.
Will there be a revision to the 21-25 TIP before the 22-26 TIP?
No, there will not be. Not based on new revenue additions, no.
Thank you.
I was just going to comment. I raised my hand to comment. Nobody else is talking right now, so I'll just talk. There is another document which is useful, Terry, and that is that it was an attachment for information to the July meeting. It's FDOT's schedule of activities for each project that FDOT's doing, when it expects to issue a contract for construction, whole thing, all the way through. It's a huge spreadsheet. I find it very interesting to look through that and find in particular that it's not always consistent with what's in the TIP for what's scheduled. But
yeah.
Nonetheless, it's a useful way to find projects if you can get through the whole thing. It's enormous.
That's one of the problems for an average citizen is trying to go through that document with only this, the title number is a number of the project. And then you got to search and try to figure out where it is and what's happening.
Yeah,
it needs to be reformatted, but.
Yeah, I agree. And I made a recommendation, which I don't know whether it was ever forwarded to FDOT, that it be sorted by geographical area.
Yeah.
Or community. So that all the ones dealing with Lake Worth Beach were all together, so you could find them if you wanted them.
I agree with you there, for sure.
Okay. Is any were there any public comments on this item?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I move approval, or I move that we recommend approval.
Second.
Motion to recommend adoption of Amendment 1. Okay.
And a second.
By Myron and a second by Chair.
All right. We're going to have the vote by roll call.
Correct.
Please.
And then if you are calling in by your phone, if you're muted on your end, I think, Jason, you're calling in by phone. If you hit *6, you'll be able to unmute on your side. Terry Brown.
Aye.
Mark Bruner.
Aye.
Jim Carroll?
Aye.
Michelle DeMone? I don't believe she's joined. Glenn Hardy?
Aye.
Jason Mankoff? And I'm still showing that you're muted, Jason. Albert Richwagen?
Aye.
Ryan Rossi?
Aye.
Paul Ryan?
Aye.
Myron Uman?
Aye.
And again, Jason, are you able to unmute on your side? The prompts on your phone would be *6.
Yep. It didn't say I was muted, even though I guess I was muted, but I've been.
Yes, I'm sorry. It was muted on our side.
Okay. So you got me now? Good.
Yes. Okay. So it passes unanimously, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on to the next item, is the motion to recommend approval of the TPA's public participation plan update. Melissa Booth will present this item, Following, before, are there any public comments? And after it, before we have discussion, I need a motion to recommend approval, and then I will open the floor to discussion. Melissa?
Yes, good afternoon, everyone. The public participation plan is the TPA's document that establishes the policies and the procedures that we use for public engagement. There is no regular schedule for updates. It's usually every several years, although we take a look at it at least once a year to see if updates are needed. And what we have now currently was a major redo of the document that was done just under 3 years ago. So we now find it necessary to make some new updates, and I'm going to highlight the primary ones of those for you. I'm sorry, there we go. Okay, and in summary, the four that we're going to highlight, the major highlights, include the official form of public notice, an LRTP and TIP adoption policy, consistency with the new TPA operating procedures, and public participation goals and objectives. The official form of public notice is and has been our website, but we use several opportunities throughout the document to really further reinforce that. There may be additional ways that we spread the word for opportunities for people to comment on documents, draft plans, and so forth, but the TPA website is the official form of public notice. So that would cover meetings, again, virtual meetings, meeting dates, changes, anything that may happen. The TPA website is the primary form of notification. The second being the LRTP and TIP adoption policy that we're proposing. What is it? It requires approval or rejection of an entire LRTP or TIP as presented in the final draft. It requires requests for project additions or deletions to be heard as proposed amendments at a future meeting. Why do it? To ensure adequate public notice for interested parties, to provide clarity for voting members, to maintain balance between available funds and project costs, and to allow staff review of adequate review of add and delete impacts. We also have new TPA operating procedures that were just adopted for the first time this year in April as a result of the need to move to virtual meetings and emergency situations. So the first bullet point here shows that throughout this public participation plan, we have acknowledged that new document, and we've reflected the updates that are required in the PPP to be consistent with the new operating procedures. One of those changes is that in the PPP, we've eliminated all of the superseded references to individual sets of bylaws that previously existed for our governing board and for each of the advisory committees. Those have all now been consolidated into that single operating procedures document, and there is a link to that document from each of the committee and board webpages on our website. The public participation plan includes participation for virtual meetings when it's legally permitted, and it also reflects the authority of the chair per the operating procedures to approve and or amend certain essential documents when the TPA is unable to conduct a board meeting in person or virtually. And then the last highlight is the way we're dealing with the public participation goals and objectives. It removes those from the actual public participation document, and instead it reflects their inclusion and reporting annually within the TPA's strategic plan, which includes an annual report card. And in doing so, that allows for the goals, the actions, the outcomes, to engage the public to be more specific, more frequently updated. As I mentioned, each year we do a new strategic plan and report card, And that strategic plan and those goals and actions are properly aligned with the TPA's Unified Planning Work Program. And are there any questions? Yes, Terry? I think you're muted, Terry.
There you go. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
If you had a high-profile project that you wanted more public participation, would you go further than just a TBA website, do something in a newspaper, or try to reach out to the local communities or groups?
Certainly. We supplement in various forms in our e-newsletter and social media and so forth. And a prime example of what you just indicated happened earlier this year when there was an amendment after the State Road 7 project was removed at the time of adoption of the LRTP. And then it was considered as an amendment at the following meeting. And we actually did do a newspaper ad.
Yeah, I saw
and it. Did a lot more outreach because we know there is a lot of public interest on both sides of that particular project. So, yes, this just shows that with the website, we can be flexible. If a meeting has to change, we can, you know, those kind of things. So that's our primary go-to place is the website. But by no means is it the only way that we do outreach, for sure.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Can I have a motion to approve, recommend approval of the TPA's public participation plan update?
So, Mr. Chair, just to note, I don't have any public comments, but I also have Myron has his hand raised.
I'll make a motion to approve.
Second.
Okay.
Motion by Terry.
Is there any further, is there any further discussion of this item?
Myron has his hand raised.
Please, Myron.
I have a number of things I'd like to talk about with respect to this. There are two things that bother me about this. One is that all these new procedures seem to make it much more difficult for people to participate. And secondly, information that's on the website is not consistent, in my view, with the public participation plan, at least with respect to the Citizens Advisory Committee. Let me do one then the other. I was really surprised that the TPA would adopt a policy that the TIP and the long-range transportation plan have to be approved as presented as a whole, which means nobody can make a recommendation or make a comment that this isn't right or that's not right or this is at the wrong time. And for whatever discussion, it has to be approved. And then at some time later, if the TPA staff wants to bring up an amendment, then an amendment will come up and maybe the Citizens Advisory Committee could discuss it and then the board could discuss it. It just seems to me that this requirement, this new procedure that these documents have to be approved as presented without amendment, that suppresses the responsibility of the members of committee and the board. The second thing is that as the PPP correctly states, the membership of the CAC is supposed to represent a distribution of interests, both in the community of various kinds. The language is in the law, and it's quite good. The method by which members are appointed to the CAC, however, is that each board member gets to appoint somebody, or gets to nominate somebody, and then the board approves it. And the members are listed as associated with the political jurisdiction of the board member who nominated them, not reflecting the distribution of expertise or interests that is supposed to be reflected in the CAC. This procedure, both the procedure and the presentation on the website, seems to me to be terribly misleading. We're supposed to represent, for example, business interests, environmental interests, the disabled, transit, things like that. We have no idea. Nobody has any idea who on this board represents those things. And the board members who nominate people can nominate anybody they want to. And we have I've seen no evidence of any procedure whereby when a new board member comes on and has an opportunity to appoint somebody, that the TPA staff talks to that board member about the distribution of interests on this committee and therefore says, you know, we really need somebody who is interested in transit, for example. And so you should appoint somebody who is interested in transit. Well, that sort of restricts that board member to that thing. And I don't think that's ever happened. I know that it has not happened in my case on the two times that I've been appointed to this committee. No one who has appointed me has ever talked to me about where I would fit in this distribution of interest. That's a problem I have with the nomination procedure. And God knows some years ago when they adopted this, I objected to it and I was overruled. So it is what it is. But the thing that bothers me most, having accepted that, is that we are all listed on the website as representing a political jurisdiction, the political jurisdiction of the member, the board member who nominated this. And that gives people the wrong impression with respect to the distribution that we're supposed to represent. So, for example, if I were an average citizen and was really interested in getting involved in transportation issues, and I was, say, you know, interested in environmental issues, and I went and looked at the CAC and said, gee, who on the CAC is interested in environmental issues that I could talk to about getting my ideas into the flow of things? They see people like me who represents the city of West Palm Beach and somebody else represents County Commission District 6 that has no relationship to the interests that we are supposed to represent. And I think at very minimum, the identification of the members with a political jurisdiction should be deleted. It would be very, I asked, you know, apparently there was an analysis some last year about how our individual members of the CAC fit into this distribution of interests. I've not seen that. Apparently Andy says he's going to find it for me, or Jason, well, somebody said he was going to find it for me. But I just don't see how the CAC, number one, really achieves that distribution, and number two, how that distribution is communicated to the public through the website. Now, I'm not sure it really matters, but if we're going to pretend that we have that we are a citizens advisory committee rather than responsive to the members who appoint us. We should, in some sense, the whole CAC should represent this broad set of interests. We just have to do things differently.
Thank you, Myron. Jason or Andrew, do you want to, or Melissa, would you please respond to Myron?
Certainly, thank you. First of all, to address Myron's concerns there about the membership and how appointments are made. Again, that is a function of the TPA operating procedures, not the public participation plan. But we can certainly take a look at that and especially see how we can possibly address the way members are identified on the website that may be more suitable for you. To go back to the earlier comments about the new policy that we're proposing for the TIP and LRTP adoption, first I want to point out that most of those documents are typically presented for information only at least once prior to being adopted as a final draft. So there are opportunities at the committee level, for instance, to make changes, to propose additions and deletions before we have a final draft. So that can happen, but the intent is actually to improve communications for the public. So when we have a final draft that's going to the board for adoption and the public reviews that, they can trust that what they're seeing is what is going to be discussed and voted on at the board meeting, that there won't be surprises that projects are deleted or added that they did not foresee. So the interested parties will have a heads up on that. And also so that staff has the opportunity to assess any impacts on the budget. If projects are deleted and there are funds left available that could be spent otherwise, or if projects are being proposed to be added and that would have an impact on the budget. So it gives the staff an opportunity to see what impacts there may be by adding or deleting projects. But more importantly, or as importantly, the public gets the opportunity to know that what they're seeing is exactly what's going to be voted on. And if there is something that even at that point after the previous opportunities at the committee level for changes to be made, for projects to be added or deleted, if there's still a desire on behalf of the board to consider an amendment, it can be put on a future agenda either at the next meeting or at any point. So I think the public's opportunity to participate is actually insured. So there are no last minute surprises. They have more opportunity. And like happened with, as we mentioned with the LRTP, when the project was deleted, the interested parties felt that they did not foresee that happening. So it was put as an amendment on the follow-up meeting, which was in February, which gave us the opportunity to add a newspaper ad and to do outreach to the community. And many of those people, they packed our meeting, the following meeting, when they realized that that project was being considered again.
Any other comments or discussion? Jim, any comments or discussion? If not, let's have the roll call.
And again, Jason, I'm sorry, I did have to mute your phone on our end during the presentation, so you will need to hit star 6 again to unmute on your side. So I just want to go back to my notes, just to recap. So I have a motion by Terry and a second by Paula for a motion to recommend approval of the TPA's PPP update. Terry Brown?
Aye.
Mark Bruner?
Aye.
Jim Carroll?
Aye.
Glenn Harvey?
Aye.
Jason Mancroft?
Aye.
Albert Richwagen?
He's muted.
Aye.
Thank you. Ryan Rossi?
Aye.
Paula Ryan?
Aye.
Myra Newman?
No.
It passes 8-1, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. There are no information. What? Who wants to speak?
I'm sorry, if they're calling in on their phones, they need to mute on their end. I'm trying to find out who's is popping up.
Okay. Oh, okay.
If you're getting any more feedback.
There are no informational items on this amendment, so we'll move down to administrative items. Any member comments? Seeing none, Items 4.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Myron has his hand
raised. Sorry.
I would, there are two things. One is at the last meeting, we asked the board, the CAC members asked that a future meeting have a presentation on the traffic management system again, and I want to be sure that's not, that's in the minutes, and I want to be sure that's not overlooked. And I'd like to suggest that we also at a future, near future meeting, get a presentation on the airports. We hardly ever think of, talk about the airports at this, and the airports are an important part of the transportation system. And it's a little more complicated. I'd like to know what's going on at the airports, and what their plans are and the effects of COVID, what the effects of COVID have been on airport operations and revenues, of course. So okay.
How do we, Jason, how, or Andrew, how do we, put that in to be reviewed and presented at a future meeting?
So it could be a request by the committee directing staff to make that future presentation.
Do we need to take a vote, or is Myron's comment sufficient?
Myron's comments are sufficient.
Thank you. Okay. So will that be reflected in the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
And at the next meeting, will it be advised as to when those presentations will be made?
Yes, we can provide an update at the next meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
I do want to note that we might not have the presentation at the next meeting, but my staff will give an update as to when we're expecting a presentation.
Thank you. Okay. Then we'll move on to any other member comments first.
I don't see any other hand raised, Mr. Chair.
Then we'll move on. Items 4.B through 4.D are informational items only. There are no staff presentations on these items unless requested by a committee member. Do any committee members have any questions on these items? First item, summary points from the July 16, 2020 governing board meeting. Seeing none, move on. FDOT project scheduling report. And finally, June and July 2020 public involvement activity reports. Are there any requests by any committee members on these items? Seeing none, our next CAC meeting was scheduled for October 7th, 2020. We will provide the information in the near future regarding where and how that meeting will be conducted. Thank you for your patience with us as we conduct.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I do have Myron has his hand raised.
Okay, Myron, unmute.
Myron, you're unmuted on your side.
I just wanted to make a comment about the FDOT project scheduling report. I read some of it, and I find some of it is inconsistent with the FDOT spending patterns in the TIP. And I just don't know what that means, but I like the scheduling report. It's very good.
All right, we can work with you. This is Andrew again. We can work with you offline if you want to show us some examples of that so we can provide that in a better format.
I beg your pardon?
We can work with you. Our staff can work with you offline after this coming week if you'd like to point out some of those that you're showing. And then I know that you all, it is a difficult report. It's a large document, a large table. And that's the format we get it in from FDOT. We have had success exporting that to a table that we can work with. So hopefully in the future, coming months, we can provide it in a more clear format for you all.
Yeah, it's very, very difficult to read on screen, I have to tell you. And it's enormous to print out. So I had to use a magnifying glass on screen. And because it, and because it's, as Terry mentioned earlier, it's just organized by project number rather than geographical area. It's really hard to find things.
Okay. Now, how often is the EDDOT project scheduling report updated?
So this is new by EDDOT, and they can run that report anytime they want to. So what we do now is request a report from FDOT before we send out agendas, and now we're going to be adding to every single agenda as an item at the end, an administrative item. So you'll see it every month.
Every month it's updated?
Correct.
And therefore, so therefore the scheduling that shows in the TIP is only updated once a year?
Correct.
Okay, so that's the disconnect between the two reports.
Yes, yes. Obviously, there's, you know, some of those phases might change around throughout that fiscal year. Now, that phase, for example, let's say it's construction, you know, you have an entire fiscal year to get that started and start to spend down those funds. But, you know, if you go outside that fiscal year and haven't spent those monies, that's when it should be reflected in a TIP that it's going to be moved.
Okay.
And that usually happens that once a year when we adopt the TIP again.
Right. So there's no way that the FDOT project scheduling report from a funded, from a expenditure basis and TIP will ever be in sync, except maybe the first day it's put out. Because once it passes, once it's updated the first time, the TIP is not updated, so it can't match.
Yeah, I compared the TIP, which was adopted in June, with the scheduling report that came out in July. And I just found one project that's scheduled in the TIP for construction in 22, which is not listed for construction in the scheduling report. And
but right, you're right, Myron, but the key is, when was the TIP that was adopted in June finalized? Probably in May?
It was drafted in May, so it was finalized in June.
But if it didn't change from May, then you're talking from May to July, and there's no way the two can be tied together if they're updating it after the TIP is drafted.
Well, you know, I could accept, I mean, that's true if the construction went from, and the TIP said it was 22, and the scheduling said it was 23, but it disappeared. Construction disappeared in the scheduling report, and there's a note on the scheduling report that says if there's no date given for construction, it's uncertain. So
the key is what did FDOT do to take it off the scheduling report? The fact that it was in the TIP 3 or 4 months previous doesn't take into consideration anything that's occurred from the TIP. Okay?
I was just confused by it, that's all.
All right.
I think you can send us that, that product. I'll look myself after this, but and see what I can find on products like that. But if you can send me that example, I can follow up and see what the issue is in that process.
Okay, it's my favorite project, Andy. the one I've been following since 2005.
Is that the expansion of I-95?
Listen, you know, I taught urban infrastructure and social decision making, and we had students. I encouraged them to find a project and keep track. Find something that's going on in urban infrastructure and keep track of what goes on over time. Learn how communities make decisions and how things really work. And I've been following this project since 2005, and it's just really bewildering.
Okay. Well, hopefully by next meeting we'll be less bewildered. And we're looking forward to meeting on the 7th of October. And I thank you for attending the meeting today. And with that, we are adjourned.